All right, just trying to get your day to a jump and start. If you haven't jumped yet for the day, that was the tune to do it with. The Ray Brown Trio with Mistreated but Undefeated Blues. Ray Brown, of course, is on bass. Gene Harris is on piano. King Garrick on drums. And this is from the trio's 1984 album, Solar Energy. Solar spelled Soularar. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and hope you had a good, restful weekend and ready to pick up from where we left off. We begin today with notices of condolence to the family of, well, you know, let's see if we struck a chord here. It's been a very trying time since the news broke that we lost. I'm trying to find my page. We lost Colin Powell, former general. Well, he's a former everything now that he has died of COVID in the midst of a battle against cancer. So the explanation we're getting, the medical explanation, is that the COVID disease seriously supplanted his ability to resist and fight back biologically. It suppressed his immune system so terribly that the COVID was able to overwhelm whatever successes he had been experiencing with cancer treatment. So he's gone. Any thoughts about that? Any feelings about this? Colin Powell was envisioned at one time. He was a Republican, and the old-fashioned kind of Republican, the flag saluting, straight talking, straight walking Republican. But beyond that, he made strides within the military, a racist military, I might add, where it was very difficult for any person of color to achieve, but he did achieve. And heaven knows what stories he had to tell about that, what he experienced within the military, even though he was an exemplary member of the military. He was an exemplary human being. We will not know these stories for a while. People would give some due respect and allow some time to pass before the stories start surfacing. But it is a good thing to remember him. And some people would say, well, he was in the military. I don't even want to talk about how silly that proposition is. And useless. But we salute him just the same because he deserved it for many, many reasons. Your thoughts, I'd be happy to know what you're thinking on this day about him at 888-874-4888. Any words to share with us on the death of Colin Powell? We'll start off the program with that. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How you
Good
doing?
afternoon.
All respect due to Colin Powell, but as a member of the military during his time, you know, I mean, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but he went along to get along. I remember when he was a full bird colonel and he lied about the massacre of My Lai. He did a tertiary investigation and accepted it, even though most brass during that time were accepting it. He lied about the yellow cake uranium, and he also lied about the anthrax. I mean, he's had his successes with the military, a very racist military at the time. The army was a very racist and a secular branch of the military, and I give him his props for that, but he was part of the system. I mean, My Lai was unforgivable. Civilians were massacred, and it was pushed under by the top brass, and since he was part of the top brass, the full bird colonel at the time, he had to go along with it. And then he went along with, if he wanted the UN to join in Desert Storm 1, which I was a part of, and his lying about the weapons of mass destruction along with Bush, you know, I can't forgive him for that. You know, I respect his career, but there are some things that need to be brought out in an honest assessment of his achievements.
Well, yes, and they will be brought out, as I said. We will soon learn, because there would be many things written about him and said about him. But we also have to remember and keep in mind the military is its own artificial society. It has its own rules and customs and mores. We on the outside may not understand it. We may not appreciate it or agree with it. But it is a government unto itself. My oldest brother was a military man, not in the U.S. military, but in the British military. And although he was the first of nine, he was very different from the rest of us. He was very, very different because his life was lived within the constraints of the British military. And so, in a way, I did not readily recognize him so much. He was not like the rest of my brothers, and I had seven. But he was the oldest, he was the first, and he was seriously military. It's a whole different study. And I think books need to be written about that, and studies need to be published about that. What happens to a person? What is that transformation like? And how does it occur? Well, but thanks for getting us started today, Ed. Thank you so much. Benji from New York, you're on the air.
How are you? Long time no speak for my hand. A few thoughts come to mind. My condolences on his death. Well, the first thing comes to mind, he was known to be in the Bronx when he grew up. He was a Shabbos guy. You know what a Shabbos guy is? You know, like, if Orthodox Jewish people, they can't turn on lights on the Sabbath, and they would call on him to do it, you know? So yes. That's actually a very nice, something that I just remembered to recall of him. He had good relations. I think he had good relations with all New Yorkers, but this was a nice thing that he did for, you know, for the Jewish people. He also came from humble beginnings, and he worked himself up to be general. So I think he's an inspiration. You can achieve and you can become general. The thought that came to mind is the media. I wanted to just discuss this angle. You know, we lost the great Hank Aaron. I don't know if you discussed it, and I don't listen to you every day, but we lost the great Hank Aaron a couple months ago. I don't even know. You know, he was in perfect health. He was 84 years old. He volunteered to take the COVID, take the vaccine to encourage other, you know, people of color to take the vaccine. And 19 days later, 18 days later, he got the virus and then died. So, you know, it's interesting how the media, so there they say, oh, there's no correlation, right, between the vaccine and his death, right? And by the way, for full disclosure, I did take the vaccine reluctantly recently. But
we're not discussing the vaccine today. We're discussing the death of a general.
No. And the reason why I say it, I want to just mention this angle. You're right. But the media says, oh, he took the vaccine, he got COVID-19, right? And it had nothing to do with the vaccine, you know? I don't know, I just wanted to touch upon that part. But I did say some things, nice things about the general. You want me to say more? Go ahead.
No, it's just that I want you to say more or less. I just wanted you to stay on topic.
Oh, okay. Because the reason why I mentioned this, because if you'll notice, the media seems to make this connection. Oh, he died because of a weakened immune system because of the cancer. No, I didn't want to come out bashing the vaccine per se. Okay. You always talk about the analysis, but that's not the day for that. Okay, so I'll leave it at that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in and making your contribution. Thank you. Gwen, you're on the air, and you're the last person in this segment before we move on to our program proper.
Okay, darn it. Okay, I wanted to call because I heard the Hank Aaron, and I had to agree with the former caller that was really stunning to me that no one talked about that. But going to Colin Powell, if I'm going to be absolutely honest about what my thoughts were in my head this morning, without getting jumped all over by other people. I mean, Colin Powell was the first person that came out and actually talked about there not being weapons of mass destruction in the middle of those hearings. He said they were, and then he walked that back. And for that, I do give him props because it is pretty hard to go up against that crew, and he did do it. And I think that, you know, my father was in the military. My husband was also in the Marine Corps. He was black. He was in Paris Island. And you're right. It's like something you never saw. I mean, Peter almost was killed down there by in one of the, you know, exercises they were doing, almost choked to death by the person training them. So if you were black in 1960 and you were in the military, your experience was not the same as with white people. But I have to say that I think everyone that's in the military has a lot of remorse and a lot of hard time dealing with the orders that they were given. And even though Colin Powell was a general in the 1960s, I don't know how old he was at the time. And I know that he was a rare breed at that time. You know, he had this big position. He was black. And, you know, we many of us want to talk about things out loud. But, you know, especially in that setting in the military, you're told just to shut your mouth and keep moving forward. And I don't know that, I mean, sometimes you have to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. I didn't find him to be a vicious sounding person. And I think at the time that he spoke against the weapons of mass destruction, he was old enough and had enough moral value left in him to at least try to turn that boat around, you know, that whole thing around before they started dropping weapons. But last thing regarding his death was this, is that it really scares me because I had heard the other day that if you have cancer, I heard by one of the nurses on Gary Knoll that they were seeing a lot of people that had dormant cancer and that after they were taking the vaccine, the cancer would spring up again. Now, my sister had dormant cancer, and she went to get that vaccine, and all of a sudden now her bladder cancer is back. And she's got lots of factors, and it just scares me that this vaccine might end up, you know, making that cancer even worse, exacerbating the problem. And it's just something that we don't hear about on any other station. So maybe he would have done better had he not taken the vaccine with his cancer.
I say it again, we are not discussing the vaccine and the efficacy of the vaccine. We're discussing the death of the highest ranking black general in the United States.
Right. I didn't hear that part, but because the only reason why I brought it up is because it was so prominently put out there this morning. But as far as he is concerned, then it, you know, we're just talking about his military. The thing that I would remember about him was that he came out and he spoke against the weapons of mass destruction. And I also wondered just how much, you know, he also knew about the current situation, and maybe it wasn't, maybe they didn't want him talking about things that he possibly knew as an inside, inside of that beltway. He might have other information. Maybe he wasn't somebody they wanted to speak, but I did also did not know he had cancer this morning. But, you know, I think that, in that generation, in that time, especially in the 60s, yeah, I mean, you're going to have to give the guy some respect for where he was. And I agree with you about the military. It is a whole different animal than most lay people understand. But I think Ed from Queens, I enjoy listening to his point of view because Ed was in the military. He wasn't as high ranking, but He had a pretty good understanding. You also have a good understanding. My father was there. My husband was there. And I can't imagine, you know, either my father or my husband going up against their, you know, their generals or whoever and questioning their authority on what the orders were to do. But I do know my father was a tail gunner and has tons of remorse and guilt till today that he always will feel bad about the people that got killed. While he was just doing his job. That was his job in World War II.
Okay, well, thank you. And we'll move on to a related, but it's kind of awkwardly related subject. And that is, which poses the question, will racism in this country ever get fixed? Will it ever go away? Will it ever die? You know, today as we speak in Georgia, a trial is opening up of for three white men who were directly implicated in the shooting death of Ahmaud. I always keep switching his name. Let's make sure Ahmaud, I got it right. Ahmaud Embry. Aubrey. And that occurred in Brunswick, Georgia on February the 23rd last year. Many of you may have seen the videotape made by one of the men who was a friend of the family, who recorded the last moments of life of Ahmaud as he was shot with a shotgun. And for reasons we still are not clear about, he was simply jogging through his neighborhood and soon was followed by a white pickup truck. In this white pickup truck was Travis McMichael, 35 years old, and Gregory McMichael, his father, 65 years old. And they were tracking him and following him with this white pickup truck. And soon, William Bryan, a self-styled videographer, joined the party and was filming the whole event up until and including when Gregory McMichael, the father, and Travis McMichael physically confronted him and shot him to death. For what reason? No particular reason, except he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was not supposed to be there. He didn't belong there. This was not a community that welcomed Blacks, especially Black men. And so Ahmad had to pay the price. The price was death. So the case technically begins today. I say technically because the first part of the trial, such as this, is jury selection. The reports are that more than 1,000 people were notified that they should report for jury selection. So it is a major trial. And yet, in our collective memory, not just as Blacks, but as a nation, this is not unusual, not in our history. We have had many, many murders and lynchings and otherwise cruel deaths inflicted on totally innocent people simply because somebody objected to them being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Sure, the case will proceed in the court as it is expected that it will. But the philosophy behind it is not on trial. And that is what ought to be on trial. When will this go away? Will it go away? What will it take to make these sentiments and actions built on those sentiments go away? Is racism ever going to quit and die in this country? You tell me at 888-874-4888. Racism in the United States, as you know, is pervasive. And for centuries has been and remains a permanent thread in the fabric of practically all aspects of our lives. We just finished talking about Colin Powell, a general, and the popular saying is there's only one color in the military, it's green. Well, for a long time we've known that there's light green and there's dark green. Racism decides where you belong on the green spectrum. Even with laws declaring racism illegal, even with incremental steps forward over the years, by and large, racism is firmly entrenched in our society. It hasn't gone away. It hasn't disappeared. It is not a thing of the past. We are going to ask, and you're going to answer the question, will it ever be a thing of the past? And if so, what will it take? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Now, look at how this works out. On this day, we're remembering a general, but we have to make sure that everybody understands he was a Black general. The highest ranking Black general. He's not just a general. The whole military doesn't accept him as a general. He's a Black general. And on the same day that we're talking about this, a trial begins in Georgia to deliver justice in the case of the murder of a young man whose so-called crime was he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. What was he doing? He was jogging. And therefore, three white men decided he doesn't deserve to live. We'll kill him. And one of them was especially enthusiastic. He filmed everything. So that's what we're talking about today. Look how things are connected that we would never in a million years believe that they are connected, but they're very much connected. It's the same story we're talking about. At 888-874-4888. Let's hear your thoughts on this. Is racism ever going to die in this country? If so, how will it die? Why would it die? If not, why not? Do you have an answer for that question? Is racism ever going to be solved in this country? Whether you are a general in the U.S. military or a young man just jogging through a neighborhood, your life, in some cases, is on the line. What are your thoughts? Suddenly, we're very serious. This is not a casual question, but we need to talk about it today. 888-874-4888. We begin to see the connectedness of things. Neither of these men had any record or were known to be bad people, but racism still is at play here. Some people can't see their way to saying, to acknowledging even, that this country did produce excellent people who were black and who were very much for their country. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm hanging in.
Yeah, like everybody else.
yes.
Yes, I do wanted to, first of all, I wanted to say about that case, Ahmaud Arbery, that these people, they killed him. And on Friday, October 22nd, we're going to be at Foley Square for the same reason. It's the 26th national day of protesting to stop police brutality, repression, and decriminalization of the generation, meaning these people, he's part of that group. Some of the mothers that their kids that have been killed by the police and by vigilantes like those gentlemen, some of them, they will be there. It will be at Foley Square on Friday at 3 o'clock. That's the day that we'll assemble at Foley Square. I just wanted to say that, put it out there. And that is the reason that I actually called. But I will answer your question. No. That situation with race in this country will never, never and never will stop. This, when the European came into this land, one of the things that they did all over was to use racism, discrimination against the people that were already here. When they went to Africa to get slaves, they didn't bring white people. They brought black people into this country, and they spread all these Europeans spread all these black people all around this continent. And you know how they treated these people. We already know that. We don't have to repeat because everybody knows what happened and what is still happening. I don't think it will ever stop because now, even in our own country, there was racism. But now racism is very, very strong. In a lot of a lot of the island in the Caribbean, a lot of these Europeans, they have moved there. And I don't know if you're aware or people are aware that when they open their own clubs and things like that, they don't even let the native go in unless the people that they know, some of them, some of the Europeans. So, no, it will never stop in this country. Never, never, never. And we could just see for what is happening right now. After Trump, and it's not that racism was not yet an open, but this is now completely open. So, and we always talk about New York City, this mosaic. This mosaic, what Dinkins used to call it, is one of the most racist state in the nation. So let's just don't forget that it will never happen. And more of us, black and brown people, will still be killed by policemen and also by vigilantes. I'm not sure what is going to happen to those gentlemen, but you know the situation. When Emmett Till was killed, these people, they were laughing in court. And the reason that they do, and they even film themselves, is because they know, a lot of them, even if they don't get away now, they know that they get away with it. And we see film and film and film after film, and they still getting away with it. So, no, it would never, never. We will have to die and born again into a new system in order for this to stop. But we never, not in this country. This country is like a tree. It had expressed this venom of racism and discrimination. We already had it in our country, but now it's even worse than ever.
Okay, thank you. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Will racism ever die in the United States?
I agree with the previous caller. It will never die because, as she said, this whole nation was founded on racism and economics. In addition to that, from the cradle to the grave, we see systematic racism in every form of government in this society, whether it be the healthcare system, the so-called criminal justice system, the so-called police violence. And a lot of the police officers are recruited, or when they come out the military, they join the police department. We also have recently heard about people in high-ranking positions in the police department that supported the January 6th attack on the Capitol. So there's always been a duality or even a tri-level of racism in this country, and it will never, ever die unless the country completely vindicates themselves and starts a whole new system. And there's no motivation to start a whole new system because, as you've heard, many of the callers call in to talk about the continuation of power. So racism will never die in this country unless there's a complete toppling of the existing structures. And I doubt very seriously if that will ever happen.
Thank you for your call. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm echoing what I'm hearing. And what comes to my mind is that we have to connect the racism that we have here with the type of capitalism that is in effect in the United States. And that's the key thing. The racism here is absolutely glued together with the type of capitalism that is in effect here because of its element of divide and conquer. They have used the formula of divide and conquer to enrich those in the ruling class, and there's no way that they're going to give that up. So there may be changes. You may have people of the black group put in high places, or as I call it, Negroes in high places and that sort of thing. but the nature of the system that is to keep control of the country with their two political divisions of the one party, and that is necessary to control the people, and racism is the key thing. This is not the type of capitalism that they have in some other places where they cannot use that racism. But the fact that you have many people here who were, you know, were kidnapped and brought here and their descendants, and you can make that difference because of the different phenotypes. So those who rule want to play the different phenotypes against each other and divide people up in any way that they can do. So as far as I'm concerned, I agree with the people who have gone before. It's going to be nearly impossible to change the system of white supremacy racism that we have here. I would not hold my breath thinking that will ever change. And that's the way I look at it.
All right. Thank you. 888-874-4888. So far, the vote, unofficially as it is, the vote is 100%. People are saying, don't look for racism to disappear from the society. It is scientifically designed to achieve the goals that it finds to be in its interest, and it will stick to those goals. It will stick to those methods of controlling society through racist application of the so-called law, and even the casual laws, the day-to-day ways in which we relate to each other. The structuring of who has power and who does not. It's not going to change. That's the view. I didn't tell people that that should be their view. That is their view. And there's got to be a reason for it. And one of the major reasons might just be, it is true. What do you say? 888-874-4888. Is racism going to disappear? G7 from New York, you're on the air.
Peace and blessings, young lady. How are you today?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good. I actually now live in Connecticut, but I am from New York City.
Okay.
Okay, now, to answer your question, I don't think that racism would ever die in America without proper knowledge. Okay, so I'm black Puerto Rican. So I'm when you look at me, you'll say I'm black. My father, which is very, very dark skinned, after he died, my mother told me that he was a racist, that he didn't like black people. Now, keep in mind, we grew up in the Lower East Side of Manhattan in the projects, nothing but black and Puerto Rican people. All our girlfriends, you know, my older brothers and sisters, the boyfriends and girlfriends were Hispanic, but me and the rest of us, all our girlfriends and my wife were all black, our grandchildren black. So I'm thinking, I'm saying, wow, it's even in our own household. I moved in, I had a roommate that was Puerto Rican. He was dark-skinned Puerto Rican, and he hated black people. So what happens is that without proper knowledge, growing up in this country, if you wanted to have a fight with someone, I'm 64 years old, so when I was a teenager, a preteen, you told them that they were from Africa. That started a fight. You know why? Because the only knowledge we had of Africa was Tarzan beating up the black people and talking to the animals. So this nation perpetuated hatred towards black people because we didn't have the proper information. I'm sure if my father grew up knowing that the basics, because he was a very, very so-called spiritual person, But if he knew that that spirituality started in Africa, along with math, science. So the only way racism can be eliminated if we are willing to be truthful and teach proper education to children when they enter the public school system. But we know that this nation, and now all European nations, is based on racism in order for them to keep on getting rich, and we keep on being on the bottom. But it's real, real serious, which imagine growing up all my life, and my friends are home, and my father actually is a racist. I mean, that's deep, very deep. So without proper education, we'll never get rid of racism, I believe.
All right. Thank you. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Oh, did I speak to Jackie already? I think I did. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Yatrice, and greetings to the audience. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that racism can be brought to a screeching halt. It's a man-made problem, so therefore it can be undone by man, woman, what have you. And it's, you know, it's a global phenomenon. It's not just in the United States. And for starters, I think it's important to have a clear definition of what we mean when we say racism, white supremacy. Because you can't solve the problem if you're fuzzy about it. Now, I don't mean you personally, of course. I'm talking
I understand.
In general. Yeah. Okay. So, as you may recall, I'm a big fan of the work of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, and I think her definition of racism, white supremacy, is the best thing going, and has yet to be her theory about color confrontation and white supremacy racism has yet to be refuted.
I want you to focus on the work of Frances Cress Welsing, because you've talked about that. I want you to focus, if you can, on the question, the specific question.
Okay, and the specific question is, will racism be eliminated?
Yes, essentially. Will racism die in this country?
Will racism die in this country? Well, it's up to us, meaning it's up to the victims of racism and the perpetrators of racism. I'm for ending it myself. But the people who practice it, they have in their minds, a legitimate reason for practicing it, I think, you know, unfortunately. You know, it's a matter of life and death, survival for them, you know?
But we just heard from G7 from New York, who said his father was racist, and his father was a black Puerto Rican.
Well, again, it depends on how you're defining racism and racist. I can't, if he says it, he said it, whatever, but it depends on how you're defining it. Which is very important. I understand.
People.
I was told that that big study back in the day of when Clinton was president. What's the scholar's name? John Hope Franklin, whatever. There was this big commission about racism and trying to get down to studying and solving racism, but it turns out that they didn't even have a clear definition of racism. So how are you going to solve a problem where you don't have a clear problem definition?
We're not talking about that, though. We're talking about your concept, your thought about the possibility of racism dying in this country. And if so, by what means?
Yes, there's a possibility of it dying. What means, the first thing you have to do is understand what it is. and why it is and how it works, and withdraw your energy from it, because you know it takes two to tangle, and if I withdraw my support from the system, that helps weaken it. And what I mean by that, take for example, I take for example this image of the white Jesus, the image that's the white Jesus, what have you. That image don't work for me, although I grew up on it. If I'm worshiping a white Jesus, that makes me want to seek approval and love by white people. You know, which ain't nothing wrong with that, but to a degree. But if that's your sole purpose in life, to get approval and acceptance from God, and you think God is white, you do anything for that, and that's part of keeping this system in place. Better yet, let me. Okay, take the current political landscape to a degree, as I understand it a little bit. A lot of this is the Trump phenomena, which you did tag early on. The Trump phenomena is I think it's true. It's a big reaction to that black man being in the White House, Barack Obama. Some people classify themselves as white, had what could be called, I guess, a full-fledged nervous breakdown by seeing this black man in the White House. And he was a particular black man. He was a black man of, quote-unquote, mixed race. He was a black man who had a white mother and a black father. And he was evidence of what can happen when a black woman and a white man, or a white man and a black woman, have offspring. You're going to have some color. And a lot of these white folks are afraid of white genetic annihilation. They want white genetic survival. And you could have white genetic survival, but get your foot off my neck in the meantime. In Minnesota, there's this church called, it's in rural Minnesota, the Asatra Folk Assembly. And these folks, they honest, they serious, like, no, we want to stay white. We don't want nothing messing with our whiteness. And it's a racially exclusive ideology. And I ain't, you know, I ain't mad at them. You know, I appreciate the honesty. Go ahead. Be as white as you want to be to a degree. Or yeah, you have a right to preserve your genes, what have you. Fine. Just get your foot off my neck. Why are you doing it?
So you think that it is possible that racism would be eradicated in the United States? How long would this take?
It depends on how long it would take us to understand what the problem is, to understand how to solve it. It would depend on however long it takes us to understand what we're dealing with. We're dealing with some folks who have these power reins. You know, they kind of sick in the head, you know, unfortunately. It's causing, well, we're all sick in the head. I'll put it. Well, let me speak for myself. I'm a little bit sick in the head, and all of it ain't my fault. But I try to, you know, do the best I can to do the best I can. Now, but you know, I heard this example of how imagine, you know, you got a roof that's standing on two pillars, you know. And one pillar is about white genetic survival, and the other pillar is about non-white self-hatred. Now, it takes both of these pillars to hold up that roof. if, for example, the non-white self-hatred pillar begins to crack and fall, then that whole construct is coming down. Or if you know, the pillar that's holding up white genetic survival, if there's a way to ensure white genetic survival without killing and maiming millions of people and ripping them off, then if that pillar falls, then, you know, the system will collapse as well. It can go either way. But yes, it can come to an end, and it needs to come to an end, because justice is better than white supremacy. Justice is better than racism.
Okay. Well, thank you. Obviously, this conversation is not ending here today. But I thought of these two things that seem so far apart, the trial in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, the death of the general. I thought that it was appropriate for us to begin to discuss what ties Colin Powell and Ahmaud Arbery and us all together, whether you're white, black, or polka dot, it doesn't matter. What is it that this society has formulated as a natural, logical way to operate and to exist, and to cause us to operate and exist? We'll pick this up again tomorrow. Thanks so much for contributing today. Bye-bye.